I honestly was hoping I would get out of speaking today because I felt crappy. And then, this morning I got a call that, and some of you know this already, but I fostered my cousin's baby for about three to four months, about 6 months ago, because she's a heroin addict and she lost custody of her, her children. And I got a call this morning that, cause she got the baby back a few months ago, and I got a call this morning that she was arrested yesterday for child endangerment, and that, they were taking the baby on Monday again. And, there's a good chance that they are going to call me and, to take him. And I'm in a lot of fear. And, honestly, I was like, I don't want to share. Like, my heart hurts. This disease has really affected my life since I was little. And, it's sad. It's heart wrenching. And, I grew up with, alcoholism. My father, is an alcoholic, was an alcoholic. Growing up, he used and drank, until my mom and him were divorced when I was 10 years old. And, he'd be in and out of my life for the next few years and then be gone for probably till I was 19, 20 years old. And I remember just when I started, going to, when I started, my daughter's here. When I started, going to, Cohen on about, 7 years ago, I remember coming in and just being really broken. And I remember, being so angry with my father, and just angry at alcoholism, addiction. And I ended up marrying an addict as well. And so, we went through quite a few years of playing the game of chase the addict, follow the addict, put baby monitors everywhere. I was a little bit crazy. I thought I was pretty brilliant, because I was going to catch him, And so when I came into Kona, I was very just very, very broken. Didn't think that, I thought that I would find out how to fix the addicts in my life, the alcoholics in my life, so that I could have relationships with them. And when I started going, I found out really quick that it was about working on myself. And I'm so grateful that that they didn't tell me how to fix them, because I didn't know that the solution would be in fixing myself. I have an amazing sponsor who we have a lot in common, and who's been through a lot of the same things that I've been through. I'm sorry, my head's a little, with me not feeling well, I feel like I'm all over the place, but who showed me the way. And I remember just working through my steps and thinking, that I was going to have to cut off all the relationships with the addicts in my life, which most of my family, they're addicts and alcoholics, and I have a ton of cousins. I have over 76 cousins, and more than half are probably addicts and alcoholics. And it was really neat, because I started going through my steps, and I was able to work through my resentments with my father. And there was a lot of abuse with my mom, and he physically abused her. And so I had a lot of anger, and I never thought I'd forgive him. I just wanted to be able to, answer the phone when he called. But I didn't think I would ever truly be able to love this man. Just 100% like love him, like out of my heart. I just thought I would do it out of pity. And when I went through my steps with my sponsor, I was able to find my part in something that I felt like I had no part of. But I was very selfish and unloving to my dad, and I was able to see those things. And I was able to see how I was not I really judged him, and I treated him very badly. And I didn't realize that he was sick. And what the steps did is they gave me a relationship with my father. And I will always be extremely grateful for Kohanon, because working through my steps is what gave me a relationship, is what helped me to have turned from being resentful at my father to having compassion for him, which ended up allowing me to love him and to accept him just the way he was, because my dad never would end up getting sober, and he ended up getting through my steps, making amends to my dad, and I would be able to have the next few years with him until I got a call that he was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. 2 weeks later, my father would die. My younger brother and sister don't have the peace that I have with my father today that I have. There was nothing left unsaid to him. There was no anger when he died. I had nothing but forgiveness. He forgave me for how I treated him. I was able to just find love for this man and truly see that he was sick and that he really did the best he could. And that's what I got from coming to these rooms. I learned how to focus on myself. I learned how to work on me. And when you work on yourself, everything around you changes. Like I said, I ended up fostering my cousin's baby, and that was really hard because I was really angry with her when I took care of her son. And today, like, I get to love her, and my heart, I cried this morning because my heart was broken, because I know how much she loves her son. She's a really good mom, but she's a really sick, she's very sick, and this disease, I have watched just rip this mom away from her three children, and they're probably going to sever her rights. And I'm so grateful that I have a place that I can come, that I can reach out to women and men, and they're going to give me hope, and they're going to show me how to walk through this, because my first reaction was, I need to call CPS and let them know, do not put that baby in the state again, and I need to save the day. And I was able to take a breath and just step back and just let God kind of do what he's going to do. That's interesting. Today I get to let God, God's will lead my life, instead of me trying to run the show and fix everybody in my life and thinking, if I just say this right thing to my little brother, he'll stop using. If I just, jab it in here like the right way, he'll feel like such a piece of crap that maybe he'll stop using. It just doesn't work that way. I have to show up as a sister and just love him. And I have to show up and just be there for him, not enable him, not give him money. But today I can answer the phone when he calls, and I can, whether he's high or not, I can just love him where he's at. And the ability to love the people in my life where they're at has given me just the most amazing relationships with them, because they want to be in my life. They're not afraid to answer the phone that I'm going to attack them. They know that they can call me, and I'm, I hope one day I get that call from my cousin. I hope she's able to call me and reach out for help. And my life is extremely blessed today. My husband's been sober for 7 years, and our house went from being a very, very broken home to where there was anger and fighting and yelling and just sadness. My kids almost got taken out of my home. And so today, I remember when I got that call just feeling super grateful. I don't know why our home got it, why we were able to get this, and why my cousin wasn't. But I know that if I, what I get to do is keep showing up. I get to keep going to meetings. I get to keep doing this deal, because when I do this, my life just gets better and better. And I have a husband today who is present and who is with us and is not running the streets trying to find hope, which is beautiful. He shows up for my kids today. He will be starting the academy for Chandler Fire Department January 2nd. Our life is beautiful today, and I owe it to the women and men in this room that have shared their experience and strength and hope with me. My heart is breaking right now, and I know that I have people in this room that I can talk to afterwards, that I can lean on for support and for love, and I will be extremely grateful to you, and I will keep going to Kona the rest of my life, because I don't think that my whole family is going to be sober the rest of my life. And with that, I will pass.
We will now hear from our other Kelly on his experience, strength, and hope.
Hello, I'm Kelly. The other Kelly. As you can tell, I was raised in a time a little bit before the idea that addiction was a disease. Spent a lot of time watching John Wayne movies, was raised by some very conservative type folks. There were no addicts or alcoholics in our family because we lived in a kinder, gentler America where we didn't discuss such things. After being now in Kohanon for about 3 years, I realized that one side of my family was quite well populated with alcoholics. When the tragedy of addiction fell to our household, I knew immediately what to do. I shut down emotionally. My wife had this. She was the nurturer. I was not the nurturer. My job was to go supply money for the family. And so I got to wander off and do my own thing and pretty much ignore what was going on at home. I knew socially the best thing to do was to shut down with my friends so I didn't have to talk about what was happening in my family. Didn't have to tell anybody about anything. And that didn't work very well. So this all went along, and I thought things were going pretty good. And suddenly I noticed a really odd thing happening. My daughter was getting better, my wife was getting better, and I was getting worse. Now, people had talked to me about going to Al-Anon and Kohanon and these other things, and I couldn't figure out in my mind of minds, the way that I was raised, why did I need to do anything when the problem wasn't with me? The problem was with my addict. So why did I need to do step work? Why did I need to stand up in front of people and, you know, admit my shortcomings when the fact of the matter was it wasn't my problem, it was her problem? And it kept getting worse and worse and worse, and it became obvious that things weren't going to work out very well. So I got badgered quite forcefully into coming to meetings. And so I was that guy sitting in the back of the room and started listening to some of this stuff. And it was really funny how slowly but surely the message started sinking in for me. And I started seeing what my parts were in it, not necessarily for how, it's really easy at first. The first thing for me to go was, oh, okay, my daughter's addiction was all my fault. So down I go. Then I had some smart people explain to me that, no, this wasn't. So I got kind of filled in on the background information of addiction as a disease. And slowly but surely, I started to climb out of that first hole, and then I started looking at the steps. Now, I've been doing Kohanon for over 3 years now, I think, and with the help of several people who are here in the room, I've now finally just recently finished my steps. 3 years, that's a long time to do steps. That is fairly stubborn. But it's been an amazing ride. The things that I've learned about myself, the things I've learned about other people, the way that it's affected my life. I've been in aerospace engineering for 32 years, convicted workaholic, and that worked well for me, like I said, for a period of time, and then it stopped working. And so about the same time that I started doing Kohanon, I started working on my master's degree. A lot of energy in this for counseling. So you might say this has kind of changed my life a bit. Wendy, where are you? This is all your fault. This has had a huge effect on me. It's changed the way that my relationships are. It's changed the way that I relate to pretty much all the other human beings on the planet. Where to take this to finish it off with? This has been a great ride for me. And I cannot thank the system and Kohanon enough and the people that are in Kohanon. And it's just been amazing. I can't see how, now that I look back on it, I don't want to wish a drug-addicted daughter on anyone, but I don't know where I would be today without it. It's funny the way that our higher powers work. But the fact that I've come out of the backside of this so much different than how I went in the front side, and definitely for the better, is just absolutely beyond me. So with that, I'll thank you all, and I'll close. Thank you very much. Your fault.
Thank you, Kelly. We will now hear from Cindy.
Hi, I'm Cindy. And I'm an Anon. Thanks for sharing, Kelly and Kelly. So this, if I stagger and go all over the place, that's kind of how my squirrels run. So I just want to warn you guys ahead of time. But I'm a chronic people pleaser, and I thought that was a good thing, right? And I'm a coacher, right? I coached a success in my other jobs that I had. I helped them see what, point out maybe their little errors and how they can correct it to be successful. So I thought that was a really great thing. I did my job well. And met this great guy. He liked to go to establishments that I like to go to after work, and we partied together. It was great. Went to happy hour, had cheap dinner, right? So I was done like after two or three glasses of wine, and it was all good. And so I started losing myself because we started getting, you know, you fall in love, you spend time together. That's all you do. Learn about the other person and move on and do that. And so what was more important was like to hang out, go party, go home, get up, do the next thing the next day. We both did everything just fine. And then we got married. That happened great. And then all of a sudden he started getting sick, and I didn't understand why he got so super sick. And anything I could do, you know, let's go to this doctor and go to the gastro doctor, you know, he would be getting like really sick, like blackout. I didn't understand that. Vomiting all the time. I thought really had was having some gastro breakdown, and he couldn't like remember stuff. And I had a bunch of normies in my life. I didn't know anything, and I didn't know anything about addiction because my family didn't have any addiction. My cousins liked to party, but then they didn't have that stuff. So we went to doctor after doctor after doctor, tests and tests, trying to figure out what was going on with my husband. And of course, then as he's getting sicker, I'm all of a sudden now getting sicker. I didn't realize I was getting sicker. I thought I was trying to be helpful. But no, now I know, thanks for the steps and my friends, that I was getting sicker as he was getting sicker. And so I would suggest, well, let's just try to go to this doctor. Or how about if you just don't drink so much, maybe just drink a little bit less, maybe you'll feel better. Okay, maybe not indulge like after 8 o'clock at night. You know, and just like, and then he got a DUI, right? So that's kind of like, oh, well, my head's like, okay, cool, he got a DUI. Not cool that he got a DUI, but he'll be sober for at least a couple of days, and he'll maybe see that he doesn't need to drink anymore because he really doesn't need to. That's what I thought. And so then after that, he had to go to went to a couple of different rehabs. We had the family group therapy thing, and it was really great. One of the ladies, her name was Tammy, she fed into my, my dementia, my detail-oriented brain, where she said, this is what the brain does for an addict. It does this and this, and it falls apart, and things don't connect. And as they get sober, then the electrons and everything start reconnecting. And I'm like, okay, cool. And she says, have you gone, Cindy, to Al-Anon? I'm like, no. I didn't think again I was sick, and I was just there to support him and help him get better. Didn't realize So then finally she convinces me to go to Al-Anon, and I go in there, and these ladies, okay, at that point in time, I'll back up. I was like living a circus. I was trying to keep everything going, you know, go, go. It's like those jugglers throw the plates up in the air and they have to hit this. And also there's puppies running around the floor. So you have to like juggle everything and keep the puppies there and show up for work and coach everybody's success. Make sure your sales team members are really good because you don't want to let anybody out there know the circus that's going on inside your head. And so I'm like, okay, I'll go to Al-Anon. So I go there and these ladies are so flipping calm, like really calm. I didn't get it. They're like just sitting there talking about their cat and their checkbook. And she's like, well, are you okay? And I'm like, well, no. But yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine. But, you know, then I go on to telling the story of how I got there, and I really don't really need to be there because I'm not the one that's sick. And sure, they're like, oh, honey. And they give me a little, I was like, what do you mean by that? Oh, honey, me. Don't make me cry. And then they give me, here's our phone numbers. I'm like, I can't even breathe, and you're giving me your phone numbers? I don't have time for you. And they're like, well, have you done the steps? And so then, aha, they said steps. I'm like, oh, so just go over there to the literature table. You know, there's some, just work your steps and you'll feel better. So my first time, I go to the literature table. I look for a piece of paper that had bullet points, 12 steps. Because I thought in my head, okay, we'll do one, check, two, check, three, check. I'm done with 12. And he's sober. And everything will be all good. Well, I learned that wasn't true. So, okay, Al-Anon's not for me. Those ladies are way too calm. I'm too crazy. I don't have time. I have to hurry and get home because I wanted to be home while he's still sober because I think I can maybe control and help him not drink so much. I could help him hold back on it because I still thought at that point in time that I could manage him. Yeah, I couldn't do that. I could coach him to the success of sobriety, and that didn't work. And so me still being a normie, we still drank. I didn't really get that he was like an alcoholic. I just thought he was a very, very active social drinker. Boy, was he active. And so, you know, then he went to rehab a couple of times. He liked those places. We got to be regulars at some of the intake facilities. They'd say, oh, hi, nice to see you, Cindy. And I'm like, hi, how's he doing? Well, we're here for him again. And they're like, well, that's good. Welcome back. We'll get things back on track. So again, they said, this time Diane said, oh, Cindy, have you gone to Al-Anon yet? I'm like, well, I went once, but they just gave me weird vibes. I didn't like it. They were like all calm, and I'm like all crazy, and I couldn't even sit still for the meeting. And she goes, well, go again. And I'm like, ugh. So I drove there, and I did Al-Anon at Scottsdale Fellowship and sat in the parking lot. There's a little store next to there, so I went to the store instead of going to the meeting. And I bought some cool stuff. And I wandered around in there because then my shopping disorder started where I would go and wander around and just like kill hours because nobody could find me there. I would be distracted, not answer my phone, right? Because I'm like, okay, I'm here. He's not going to come to this store and follow me around. And he probably couldn't walk to follow me around there. And he's at home and drunk, and I don't want to be there anyway because I'll probably say something stupid, which is always stupid. My mom told me one time, she's like, Cindy, you can't ration with drunks. You don't even waste your time. Don't even waste your breath. They're going to say what they're going to say. They're going to think what they're going to think. So I was like, yeah, whatever, Mom. I can still be successful. I can help this. So then, yeah, that Al-Anon thing didn't work. So I just kept on doing the family group therapy and visiting different rehab facilities around the valley, making good friends. And it's true. So then he discovered 2121, and that was all great. And so I don't think he could drive at that time, so I would go drop him off at 2121. And I'm like, okay, well, so as I was like, was I dropping him off really to make sure he went? Yes, probably, now that I know, but because he could have gotten a ride from somebody else. You know, at that time, prior to that, I would find like, oh, I'm not drinking anymore, but I move something and there's a little miniature there. Or we'll be at a restaurant, he'll walk out of the bathroom and a miniature will fall out of his boot. You know, or I go to get something out of the trunk in the car and where the spare tire is, there's a fifth. Huh. How'd this get there? I didn't put it there. But that's all right. You know, I'll just pretend like I didn't see it or whatever. So anyway, so fast forwarding back to 2121, he was getting healthy and doing all the right things, but I didn't know I was sick. And so someone near to me said, well, Cindy, you know, you're sick. I'm like, I don't think so, but I'll go to my doctor. And she gave me a physical, gave me EKG, it's all okay. Keep taking my blood pressure medicine, all right. So again, there's Cindy, you're sick, you need to get some help. I'm like, okay, I'll go see a therapist. So I went and saw a therapist, and she's like, well, are you going to self-help groups? I'm like, no, I go hike. She goes, well, we need to go to groups. I'm like, yeah, whatever, Donna. And I did. So I stopped seeing her. Imagine that. So then here I sit in 2121 parking lot. And I just sat on the, you guys know that place, the little bench outside the little chapel door. I was hanging out there every Thursday. It was a great little place. Sometimes it got a little cold. So then I go sit in the car because I didn't, you know, I'm not going to go sit in that Cohen meeting. It looks like a little tiny room with a bunch of strangers. And I was so like super, even more fearful than I am now. I was super fearful to go in that room because I didn't realize, my story is unique. I didn't realize that there's a lot of people on this planet that are just like me, only with their own little seasoning in it. So still, I didn't go. And then we had another tragedy that happened in our life, and my husband's sponsor at the time, I called him, told him what happened. He said, my girlfriend's going to go to a meeting. Why don't you meet her there? I'm like, well, because I look like shit. My hair is, I haven't done my hair. I look, have horrible clothes on. It starts in just a little bit. He just went to the hospital. I look like crap. And he's like, we don't care how you look. Just come. My eyes were like swollen out to here because I was crying so much, you know. But I'm like, all right, well, he's in the emergency room and then he's going to go somewhere else. And obviously anything I've done for the last 12 years hasn't made a damn bit of difference. So let's just try this, right? So I went to that Sunday meeting. And I was just a freaking wreck. I mean, I was bad. But two ladies there let me just cry it out and talk it out, what I needed to do that minute and what I didn't need to do. And I listened to them. And then I started going to the Thursday meeting and then the Tuesday meeting. And by the grace of God, I'm a little less crazy. My squirrels are still real hyper, and I can't control them. That's just like nature of my beast, I think. But now, I not really like those ladies in Al-Anon because I'm sure it's like not calm. But someday, maybe, I'll be on that asset. But I'm really grateful for everybody sharing with me their experience, strength, and hope, and not judging me. And just letting me come to him, just spew my stuff out and cry. And because I really did think I could manage him to success and sobriety. And at the same time, my mom was dying of cancer. So then I had to also keep my job, right? So I had to, like, treat my husband's addiction as a business and my mom's sickness as a business, really, because I needed them both to be successful while I still kept my team successful at work because that's how I got paid. That was just shitty and a lot of responsibility. And I wish I knew now what I should knew then what I know now. And but I can't manage, I certainly couldn't keep my mom alive from dying with cancer, right? And I couldn't keep my husband from drinking. He's got to do that for himself. So I'm finally started getting back and learning things about me and doing things for me and realizing that I'm a human being and what I feel and know in my heart does matter. So if I want to go take a walk, I can go take a walk. If somebody's quirky, they're quirky. And I can't do anything to change that. And thank you for listening and have a great day.
Thank you, Cindy. We will now hear from our last speaker, Melissa.
Hi, you guys. My name is Melissa.
Hi.
So I apologize for being late. Just drove in from Phoenix, and traffic was awesome. Actually, it really wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I just didn't get here as quickly as I wanted to. I couldn't do my regular pace on the way up here. So anyway, a couple people might know what that means. It's a little frustrating with some of the trucks. But anyway, we're here to talk about Kohanon and gratitude. And you know, I look out into the audience and I see a lot of different people that I know, some that I may not. And what I see is people that have helped me the last X amount of years. People that I've been able to relate to. People, I mean, whose story may not be exactly like mine, sort of like what you were saying. There's spice in it, maybe not. But areas that your family and my family have been very similar, and areas that you've helped me to see a different truth. And when I got here, that wasn't the case. When I got here, I didn't want to really particularly leave my house. Because I was in a lot of fear that if I stayed home, then I could control it. If I stayed home, they wouldn't get loaded. If I stayed home, you know, when they walked out the door, I'd be there when they got back, right? So I was really isolated. When I started coming here and sharing my, I didn't share it first because I wanted to isolate. But what I did do is I listened. And there were some people, some women and some men, that had children and wives, significant others and friends. And when I heard their stories, I was like, okay, I think I can get some of that, and I could go to meetings. And when I first got here, the first one I really had was my ex-husband, and I thought he was going to be like it, right? Then came the kids. And I thought, okay, the first one's down, we should be good, not the truth. And I say that because I drove up here tonight, and I was supposed to have a different human with me, and she made a decision not to come, and where I once called my sponsor and asked if I was allowed to, I don't know, I think the term handcuffed to a room was maybe present. And if not the room, how about like the kitchen table? I would be okay with that. They could get to the remote. That was a big fat negative. There would be police involvement and it would be me going to jail, so that didn't want to work for me. And just the other day, I was been in this deal with my daughter for a little while. And I was reading in our Cullinan book, the one that this has like been a really big life saver for me. And sometimes I think that because I've been in Al-Anon for a long time, I shouldn't have any more problems. And when difficulties do arise, I feel that something's wrong with me or the program. And actually, in some ways, I have more problems than ever. When I come to Al-Anon, I had just one problem. I didn't know how to fix them. My life was a complete shambles, but I swore that I was fine. A couple other people I heard say that. Today, I know I can't fix anybody but myself, and I challenge myself daily. And, you know, when I read that, that's kind of where I'm at. You know what I mean? Like, I thought I'd get to this point in Cullinan where I wouldn't have these things, right? The things being the problems, like humans that have addictions. And I thought maybe, you know, it would get better. I thought I would get better. And I have, right? Those moments of the isolation are shorter. The times that I stay home and don't reach out are a lot shorter because I don't want to miss out on my life. I don't want to miss out on working with other people. I don't want to miss out on all of life's joys. And when I stay in that disease with them, there's no hope for that. I don't get to do my life. And, you know, as I walked in the door from work, you know, hurry up, the bags were packed last night. I had everything in order. The house was clean. The laundry was done. Okay, I'm ready to go. And she promptly tells me, no, I'm not going. I'm like, listen, you're about a buck, maybe. And I'm pretty sure I could throw you over my shoulders and we're out. Like, that's what's happening. And, you know, I sat on the couch and I talked to my sponsor like 3 hours prior to this and had my plan and my guidelines, by golly, because those are important. And they are in my life. Guidelines and boundaries are important in my life. And at that point, this program comes in. How important is it? Like, the things I'm grateful for are the tools that I've learned in this program. Not how much time I have or don't have. Not how good or bad it looks. Not how wrong or right it is. Not how much I'm going to control the situation or how much I want to anymore. Today it's more about where's the freedom, you know, what's the solution, how important is it, and how big of a fit and how much shit am I going to lose because I want my way, which is for her to get in the damn car because I want to get here to be with us. So I sat and I prayed, and I thought, I can stay here, I can call out in the meeting, blah, 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 but then I'm still going to be here with the disease, the dis-ease, like not her dis-ease, mine. And that's no longer acceptable for me today. And so although I had a guideline that was like, I'm doing this, and this is exactly what's going to happen, it changed to, okay, if the house gets destroyed, you know, my mind immediately goes, you're throwing a big party, there's going to be heroin addicts all over my house, and it's going to be in complete shambles, it's going to be dirty, and I'm going to flip out. Like, I don't know if any of that shit's going to happen, and does it really matter? Because, like, right now in this moment, I need to get in my car and go. Get in the fucking car and go. And that's what I did, right? I prayed, I meditated, and that's what I did. That's, God was like, get in the fucking car and go. Like, maybe your God doesn't cuss, mine does. But, and that's what I did, you know? And I drove the speed limit because, you know what, I was really quite calm. And I'm able to adjust to that and have a lot of gratitude for this program and for the people in these rooms because those are the reactions that I have today. They're not reactions, they're responses, but my reaction is more response-like as opposed to, like, ripping her out of the seat, getting in. Like, that's not going to, like, nobody's going to be happy. She's going to get here and be miserable, and I'm going to be like, I'm going to be chained to the hotel room. That doesn't sound fun. So, like, for me, practicing these steps and really having that conscious contact with God and my understanding and reaching out and talking to people, right? I have so much gratitude for that because my life has completely changed. The dark, dismal abyss of disease in my world with my addicts can be super dark. And And if I choose to stay in that, I mean, I'm as sick as that. And I don't want to be that today. Today, I practice and I pray and I keep coming back because this program has given me more gifts, humans, relationships, relationships that I wouldn't have ever been able to have. I mean, there's a human in here that I'm pretty sure we were twins at some point, and we've lived very close to the same life, and we've had a lot of the same experiences, and I'm so grateful for her, right? If I don't show up, if I don't step up, if I don't come and share, the women in my life that I get to sponsor in this program, similar experiences. I call on the phone and go, like, what did you do? And I'm grateful for that. I get to do that with the women in my life today because I let them in, right? And through them, I get to see the sunlight of the Spirit and be closer to God and be closer to other people. And the relationships around my life that maybe aren't a part of the disease flourish, you know, and present when I go to work. And I think that's the biggest change for me that Conan has brought is that when I'm in disease, like, I'm not present for anything else in my life. I can't be. Because I'm so obsessed with what they are doing or not doing. And that just, like, I'll be at work. I'm not present, right? I'm not present at all. And this program has allowed me the opportunity to open the door to be present in every other area of my life. And the compassion, that one I still struggle with, to be super honest. And I go back to, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy, right? I want to be right sometimes, honestly. Like, let's just be honest. I want to be right. But more than that, I really want to be happy. I want to be happy, and I want to enjoy this life, and I want to be present for the people that are in it. So I'm super grateful for this program. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share. Thank you for everyone that put this together and to be asked to share. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Can I have another big round of applause for everybody, for all of our speakers? Before we close the meeting, we're going to pass the basket for the seventh tradition. And I've asked a friend to read the do's and don'ts, Terry.